We're holding on page Peches in Baba Basra, also Ois Chofches. Peches, I mean. Page Peches, Ois Peches. We learned yesterday about the fact that in one pasuk it describes the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the first Beis HaMikdash as being 30 Amos, well, it describes the whole Hethel as being, including the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, as being 30 Amos tall, but then later on it describes the Kodesh HaKadoshim as being 20 Amos tall. So what does that mean? So Rabbi Chanina had explained that it means that the top 20 amos above, you have there were the kruvim above that are attached to the arden, attached to the kaparis, but then you also have larger freestanding kruvim that Shlomo HaMelech made out of wood and plated with gold, which were 10 amos tall. And when we say 20 amos, we mean 20 amos from the top of them until the ceiling, and that whole space was empty. And the way that, and therefore the pasuk is implying to us that the area below was also empty, in the sense that the arden did not actually take up space in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Gemara says, so now, the Ein Yaakov written, so Masech the Megillah, Kosev HaPerek Rishon Maimon B'Inyan Zevaroi L'Sadro Mokam Azeh. You have a relevant Gemara about that in Megillah as well, that talks about this, that the Oren did not take up space. It says over there, Omer Ablevi V'Temer Apapi, Dovazem Masorah Sibi Adenim Avisenu. We have the following point as a Masorah in our hands that we have from our ancestors. Mokam Oren, Enim and Amida, the space of the Oren did not actually take up space. In other words, even though the Oren has dimensions, as mentioned in the Torah, and the Kodesh Kodashim has dimensions, as mentioned in the Pesukim and Sefer Malachim, nevertheless, the Oren did not take away any of the floor space over there. Tani Nami Hach, we learn similarly in Abraisa, Oren Sha'asa Moshe Yeshle Rebach Esa Amos Lachol Ruach V'Ruach. There were 10 Amos on every side of the Oren. Now the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself was 20 by 20 Amos. So if the Oren actually took up space, like a regular Gashmiyistic object, then the width of it is 2.5 Amos. So 20 minus 2.5 would be 17.5. And then you would have, if you measured from each wall of the Oren to the nearest wall of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then you would have 9 Amos and change. But you didn't. You had full 10 Amos. Uchtiv, as the Pasuk also says, which the Gemara here in Baba Basra had quoted as well, the Lifnei Dvir, in front of the Dvir, whereas we learned yesterday, the Dvir means the Amatraxin, the wall that separated the Kurdish from the Kurdish HaKadoshim, in front of that, meaning the area of the Kurdish HaKadoshim itself, Estrum Ama Uruch, the Estrum Ama Roich, the Estrum Ama Kremasa, was a space 20 Amas long by 20 wide by 20 tall. And we learned yesterday, according to the way Rav Chanina explained it, in reality it was 30 amos tall, but we mean 20 amos again of above the kruvim. Right? Sapehu zahav, and he plated all the walls of the Kodesh HaKadoshim with gold. So now you would have to ask, Oren Gufa, Hecha Habamunach. So where was the Oren in that? If the Pasuk is saying that the Kodesh HaKadoshim is 20 by 20 of completely empty space, but then in the middle of it you have the Aron. So where would the Aron actually be? Elo lav shemamino b'nes hayoymid. So you see from that it actually stood b'derech nes, and that the measurement of it did not take up any space in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So Marsha explained, we talked about a little bit yesterday what the significance of that point is. Marsha says the point is the Shechina was where the Shechina rested over there between the Kruvim, which is why we call Hashem Yosheva Kruvim, and he would speak to Moshe Rabbeinu from there. So therefore, the same way as Hashem himself doesn't take up physical space, neither did the Aron. And then different Mephoshim talk about different symbolisms in it. It symbolizes the idea that Torah is everywhere. There's no particular place in the world that's unsuited for Torah. Every place, the Torah doesn't take up physical space in the world, and therefore there's no place in the world that you can say the Torah doesn't belong over here. It represents that the expenses that a person does for Talmud Torah, Ben Yoyada explains that the expenses a person spends on Talmud Torah and Shabbos and Yom Tov and so forth are not deducted from his annual income. In other words, Hashem will reimburse him for them. So the same way as such things don't take up space in a person's income and expenses, the same way as the Oren and Kaparis and Kruvim didn't take up space. There's a letter actually from the Uda years when the Rebbe talks about the idea. You have three different angles you can look on it. You can measure the Oren itself and find that it has on the face of it physical dimensions, 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5 amos. Second of all, you can measure the actual Kurdish Kedushim and find that's 20 by 20 Amos. And third of all, then you can measure when the Oren is in there and find the 10 Amos in either direction, in every direction. So that explains that Rebbe develops the idea in that letter that those represent, respectively, Das Tachten, Das Elyon, and the concept of Nimna HaNimnos, that the Eved Hashem is beyond any kind of understanding at all, and that it's impossible to say that there's anything impossible for Hashem. So the Gemara goes on. Omer Rabbi Noi Omer Shmuel Kruvim Benesori Omnim. Also, those oversized Kruvim that Shlomo made and had placed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, those also stood Bederach Nes. Namely the bodies of them. Shenemar, the pasuk describes them. V'chomesh ames knafa kruva echos. The wing of one kruv was 5 ames from end to end. V'chomesh ames knafa kruva shenis. And the other kruv also had. And then the second wing of that kruv was also 5 ames. Esther ames v'ktsos knafav v'ktsos knafav. So there's a total of 10 ames from one wing tip to the other of the one kruv. And then you have the other kruv stood next to that, and the wings are touching, as the pasuk goes on to say. So therefore, suddenly I have to consider if the wings themselves took up a space of 20 amos. So gufayu hecha havekaimi, where would there have been room for the bodies? On the face of it, the body is between the wings. You have wing body wing. If the wing span itself, if each wing is 5 amos and the total of the wings on each one is 10 amos, then there'd be no room for the bodies, given that the Kurdish Kedushim is only 20 amos wide. Now, Rashban explains, in other words, that it's not so much the fact that the pasuk says that each one from wingtip to wingtip was 10 amos. That's not really so much the question. But rather the question is, the pasuk seems to phrase it that if you were to take these two wings, suppose you were to detach them from the kruv and put them one next to the other, it would be a wingspan of 10 amos. But the fact is, again, you have the body between them, so where would they have fit? So that means that the bodies must have stood there the derech nes. They must have stood there b'derech nes. However, Masufla Abaya. However, Abaya questions that the Duma Bolton Kasanagolim Havokaini. Maybe the wings stuck out from their backs like the way wings of chickens do. You take a chicken for kaporis, for example. You know, you have the wings are attached in the middle of the back. So the total wingspan of the chicken, you don't factor in also the width of the body, because the wings are not attached to the sides of the body like they are on some other birds. They're attached to the back. So it could have been the same thing over here. The bodies of the kruvim stuck out, and then the wings were behind them, and there's no issue with that. There's a footnote over here that asks, so then why, so if that's the explanation, then why are we adopted mentioning chickens? Many birds are like that. Their birds are attached together on the back. And the fact is there is space between them, and he goes into a bit of an explanation over here that after all, you could argue that the Gemara doesn't even mention the point that the wings may have been on an angle. So when Abaya is asking, they were like chickens. What he means is, in other words, he means that it may have been that in fact he may mean exactly that. They may have been on an angle. So that's in that case. So the total length from the end of one wing to the other is indeed 10 amos. But given that they're on an angle, given that they're on a diagonal, then that means in along the straight line of the floor they take up less space, and therefore there wouldn't be a problem. So there's this footnote over here from Mashbir, whoever that is, explains that may be the import of Abaya's question. Maskefod Rava also has a question on it. Another reason why we don't have to say that it was Bederech Nes. The Duma Zeshaloi Keneged Zeh Havukaini. Maybe they weren't directly, one next to the other. You have the one of them, the wing touches one wall, and the other one, the opposite wing touches the other wall. But maybe what you have is that they overlap a little bit. So they weren't directly one in a straight line with the other. They were offset a little bit. So when the pasuk says their wings touched one another, it means that someplace along the length of the wing, one wing touched the other, the wing of one kruv touched the other one. So you don't have to resort to a nest for that. Maskus of Achaba Yaakov, and Achaba Yaakov says another point as well. Maybe they were placed on the diagonal, and here you have the diagram here in Rashbam, which shows, in other words, they may have been placed. The pasuk just says that the tip of one's wing touched one wall, and the tip of the other one's wing touched the other wall. But that doesn't have to mean they were in a straight line. It could be they were in a diagonal, and the diagonal of the Kodesh HaKodashim is 20 by 20 amos. The diagonal of it would be 28 amos and change. In that case, then there's plenty of room for 20 amos of wingspan plus some room for their bodies, and no need to resort to nisim in order to say that they were placed that way. And Master Lord of Huna Breder of Yeshua. And Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua points out another point, the Dilma Besa Me'iloi Ravach. Another point you could say is maybe the womb was actually a little wider as you go further up. Very commonly in those days, they would build walls thicker on the bottom and then narrowing as they go up. The coastal, actually, you go on the coastal tunnel tours, if you look at by the coastal where they have those the glass or lucite or whatever those plates are that are built into that are fixed into the ground over there, from which you can look down and see lower layers of the coastal. You can see it sticks out further into below the coastal plaza, because that's how they built walls in those days. It made them more stable. So by the same token, then, when we say that Kodesh HaKodashim is 20 by 20 amos, says of Huna Breder of Yeshua, it means that the floor space where the walls touch the floor is 20 by 20. But as you go further up, it's a little more. It could be 21 by 21. So again, there would be room enough for the, even if they don't stand in a diagonal, even if there's not offset from one another, or even if they weren't sticking out of the back of the body like chickens, etc., nevertheless, there could still be room just by virtue of the fact that the walls themselves are narrower as you go further up. So considering all those points so far, plus a few others the Gemara is going to mention, then you don't have to say that the Kruvim were standing b'derech nes. And for that reason, in fact, when we had before in the previous piece of Gemara, when it said Makam Orim Okruvim Einim and Amida, many Mephoshim say the word Okruvim doesn't belong over there, precisely because the Gemara is pointing out over here that the Kruv, first of all, the original statement Makam Orim Einim and Amida was Reb Yochanan or Reb Levi or Reb Yochanan saying, and then bringing a brisa to that effect, but now we're saying that may only be the Orin. There's no reason to say that referred to the Kruvim necessarily. And Maskif for Reb Papa, and Reb Papa continues with another question. The Dilma Makif Havu Kaifi Yadaihu. Another possibility is that their wings themselves may have been bent. So in other words, when we say each wing was 5 amos long and the total is 10 amos, it means if you measure along the curve of the wing, then you have 5 amos and 10 amos respectively. But because they were curved, this is somewhat similar to what the footnote over here from Mashbir is saying about having them on a diagonal. So not a diagonal, but a curve. So in other words, therefore, again, you have 5 amos if you measure along the curve, but that would take up less along the floor. And Maskus Larabashi, another possibility is maybe their wings themselves were overlapping. So Rashbam explains, Meshalchafi would mean that maybe they, instead of having their wings sticking out from either side of their bodies, maybe instead they're folded one over the other, like the way a person might clasp his hands together. Rashbam points out the pasuk does say the wings were towards the inside of the towards the inside of the Kodesh HaKodashim, touching wing to wing. So fine, what it means is, in other words, they were placed in such a way they're touching one another, but not necessarily the other wings extending across the full width of the Kodesh HaKodashim. So for all those reasons, we don't necessarily have to say that they were standing b'derech nes. The Yad Rama learns that last one, Mashal Shachofi, have a Mashal Chofi, learns it a little differently, that it means similar to Rava's explanation before, that it means that maybe they were overlapping a little bit. So maybe the wing of one overlapped a bit with the wing of the other. They weren't placed exactly in a straight line, and therefore that makes up for the space that the bodies would have to be taking up. Okay. Now all of these explanations presuppose that the Kruvim are standing one next to the other. So the Ran brings over here a question that the Gemara tells us in Yuma that so first of all the Gemara is going to talk about the Kruvim would sometimes face one another and sometimes they would face away from each other, but in fact the Gemara in Yuma tells us that when the Goyim came into the Heichal, they found the Kruvim were hugging one another. And they, in fact, started looking down on the Jewish people for it. They said, are you talking that in their holiest place? They have an image like that. And the Gemara also says that, in fact, the Kohenim would show that to the Jewish people when they were Olah L'Regel, to show how beloved they are to the Jewish people, like a husband and wife. So forget about whether their wings are spread out or whatever. Shouldn't be that they're actually hugging one another. So he brings from the Rimi Gash, who in turn explains from the Rif that when we say when the Goyim came in there and they saw them hugging, that was Davka. It was Davka at those times. Davka when they came into the Kodesh, when the Goyim came into the Kodesh Kodashim, and before that, during Aliyah L'Regel, specifically then they would be hugging. All the other times, here the Gemara is going to talk about whether they were facing one another or whether they were facing away from each other, depending on Osin Ritzon Shomokim or not. But specifically at those times, by the Aliyah L'Regel, so that the Jewish people could see how beloved they are to Hashem, and by the Churban, precisely so that the Goyim should have more reason to mock them, then Hashem arranged it that not only they're not even standing one next to another, as all of these explanations in the Gemara presuppose, but rather that they're actually hugging one another.
This is the first place.
So now the thing is like this, actually. So there's also a long Tosfos there in Yuma, and there are different other Mephoshim that talk about which Kruvim are we talking about. Based on description over here, we have two sets of Kruvim so far. You have the ones attached to the Kapodas, and you also have the freestanding ones that Shlomo made. On top of that, also, the Psukim in Melachim describe that on top of that, all over the walls, the design on the walls of the Heichal and the Kodesh HaKadoshim was also a design of Kruvim. So which ones are we talking about that would be hugging one another? There are different understandings. In fact, so here, the Ran is bringing from the Rimi Gash and in turn from the Rif, that it means that these large freestanding Kruvim that we're talking about are the ones that normally would not be hugging, but only at these specific times that the Gemara mentions they were. But there are Mephoshim who explain, as I said, Tosfos discusses it at some length over there and different other Mephoshim discuss, that it may have been what the Gemara calls their Kruvim Bitsurta, the ones that are painted or sticking out on the walls. Those may have been the ones that were embracing and those are the ones that the Goyim saw.
So then in that case,
those could have even been in the second Beis Mikdash. There's a Yerushalmi, I think, that mentions that when it came to the first Churban, some of the walls of the first Beis Mikdash survived, and they were able to incorporate them into the second Beis Mikdash. So in that case, then some of those Kruvim Ditzurta may have still been there. As opposed to, if we talk about the ones attached to the Oren, those were hidden away when the Oren was hidden away at the end of the first Beis Mikdash. And as far as Shlomo's Kruvim, it doesn't specifically say what happened to them. The pastures, they were taken to Bavel like most of the other treasures of the Beis Mikdash. Alright, so the Gemara says, Ketzed Heim Oimdim. So how, these Kruvim, how are they standing? How are they positioned? Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar. So Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar argue. Chad am a pneim ish al achid, v'chad am a pneim labois. One says they were facing one, they had their faces turned one towards the other, and the other one says they had their faces turned towards the inside, in other words, you would see the pashtus, pneim labois, would mean that when the Kohen Gadol would go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he would see the backs of their heads, and they're facing towards the Aron. So the Gemara says, "Lamandram of Pneim." The question is, "Lamandram of Pneim Ishal Ochin Haksiv of Pneim Laboyis." The fact is, in Divrei Hayomim, when it describes the detail, more details about these Kruvim, it says that they were made with their faces facing towards the inside. So how does he say they were facing Ishal Ochim? And the answer is like Kasha. Can Bizman She Yisrael Osin Ritzon Hashamokim? Can Bizman She Yisrael Osin Ritzon Hashamokim? It depends whether the Jewish people are doing what Hashem wants versus not. When the Jewish people are following what Hashem wants, then they're looking at one another like a man and woman who love one another, showing that Hashem loves the Jewish people. And again, as the Ran had said, as the Ran had brought from the Rimi Gash, there were even times when they would actually see them hugging one another. But even when it's not those special times, at the times of Aliyah L'Regel or at the time of the Churban, then nevertheless they would be looking, they would be facing towards one another. So therefore, according to that, they were made in that way to begin with, just to, in order to represent that the Jewish people should continue doing Ritzon Hashem Malkim, and they would, and they'd continue to be in that posture. But then, when not, then Ufneim Labois, then their faces would be facing one away from the, would be facing away from one another, and they'd just be facing towards the back of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So, what about Lamanda Ufneim Labois, Hoksiv Ufneim Ishalachiv? The Pasuk says about the Kruvim that they're facing one another. Now, that Pasuk that the Gemara, that Ufneim Ishalachiv is talking about the ones on the Orain, but the Gemara is assuming that the Gemara is assuming, according to this opinion, that the same thing would have been with the large ones that Shlomo made.
The ones that Shlomo made, what did they do? They were
freestanding. They were, yeah, they were freestanding. They were made out of wood. They stood on the floor and they were plated with gold. They stood on the floor, and we were just saying before, their wings extended across the whole Kodesh HaKadoshim, and therefore they overspread over the Kruvim that are on the Aron, and over the Aron with their wings as well. So like you have three levels. You have the Aron itself, you have the Kruvim on top of it, and then you have these oversized Kruvim on top of that. Yeah. So according to the opinion that they were Pnei Maboyas, doesn't the Pasuk say Pnei Ishalachim? Now the Gemara could have given the same answer, Yisrael Oisim Ritzon Hashem Malkim or not, but Tosfos points out the Gemara is going to assume that to begin with, when they set them up, they would set them up in the position for Oisim Ritzon Hashem Malkim. They wouldn't first put them in the position when the Jewish people are not behaving the way they're supposed to. So then the answer is the Matzdadi Atzdudi. The answer is, according to that opinion, means they're not looking directly at one another. They're like half looking at each other. So like when Rashbam describes, like a person is talking with somebody else, but he doesn't stare him directly in the face. He turns his head a little bit in the other direction. And so Rashbam and Tosfos again point out, according to this opinion, that we wouldn't say that l'chatchila they made them in the posture of Enos and Ritzon Hashem Malkim. So rather, according to that, it means that it was both. They were Ishalachim, but they're also Pnei Mabois. They're also looking respectfully towards the Oren at the same time. Maharsha points out the symbolism is that as long as the Mishkan existed, the Shechina never left the Jewish people. Even after the Chet HaEgel, we know more that Hashem threatened to take away his Shechina and send only a Malach, and Moshe basically blackmailed Hashem into not doing that. And if your Shechina doesn't come with us, we're not leaving here. And Hashem gave in, so to speak, and said, fine, I'll go with you. So therefore, the ones on the Oren, which originally those were the only ones in the Mishkan, after all. So those faced one another, as the pasuk says, Ufneim Ishalachim. Meanwhile, though, the ones who have Shloima, eventually the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Eventually, the Shechina left it. The Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Therefore, to begin with, they were made in a way Pneim Labois, where their faces are either completely towards the inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim rather than facing one another, or that at least according to the second opinion that they were partially facing one another. All to represent that point that eventually the Shechina would leave there if the Jewish people didn't live up to it, as in fact they didn't, and then therefore it did. So the Gemara says that Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Unkulos Hager Oimer, Unkulos the Ger, this is the author of Talmud Unkulos, says, Kruvim Masit Tzatzuim Hein. The Kruvim were made in a way of Tzatzuim, which is the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim actually describes that way. Whereas Tzatzuim in modern Hebrew, Tzatzuim means toys, but that's not what it means over here. It means, Rashbam says it's Meloshet Tzatzuim. It means Tzatzuim with an ayin is like Tzatzuim with aleph. So it means like children. So they were made with the faces of children, and their faces were only partially facing towards one another. Like when a Talmud takes leave of his Rebbe, he doesn't turn his back on his Rebbe. That wouldn't be respectful. But he doesn't. On the other hand, he has to see where he's going, so he sort of like half looks at his Rebbe as he's looking with his other eye over his shoulder to see where he's going. So therefore we see from that explanation of Unkulos Hager fits very well with the explanation that we said that to begin with they were made in such a way partially facing one another. And therefore it's not Bisman Shisro Oisin Ritzon Hashem Malkim versus not. According to that, they were always in that position, partially facing one another and partially not. Again, then, this is we're talking about the large kruvim, whether the same thing applies to the kruvim on top of the arun, and whether it applies to the ones on the walls. That you have the different opinions that I was mentioning before. This that we said, by the way, that the Ranan pointed out that at the time of the Churban they were also embracing one another in order that the Goyim should have what to mock the Jewish people about. There's another explanation. There's a more well-known explanation about it, that the reason is to represent that even the Churban was really the ultimate expression of love of the Eibishter for the Jewish people. He'd rather give up his house. He'd rather destroy and tear down and burn down his own house and spare the Jewish people. A couple of blocks later, it talks about dinim about selling land, and you have dinim about, for example, a person is selling a road to somebody else. As they said, somebody says, "I'm going to sell you a road. What's the minimum width that's considered a road in halacha? I'm going to sell you a path. What's the minimum that's considered a path in halacha?" So in the course of that, it talks about walking along the path or the road or whatever, and whether that establishes a chazaka. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a brisa, holach bala orko or the rochba. In general, a person buys a plot of land. So holach bala orko or the rochba. If he walks in it, the length and the width of it, kana makam hiluchay, give it to Rabbi Eliezer. Then Rabbi Eliezer says he acquires at least the areas where he walked. The Chum say walking does not establish anything. You don't make a chazaka. You don't make a kinyan that way. Only if you do an actual chazaka. Earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara explains a chazaka would be you do something useful with the property. Classic examples the Gemara mentions earlier are Noah Goda Reparats. A person puts a lock on the door. He fences in an area that wasn't fenced in. He breaks through a fence that was there. All those kinds of things will create an actual chazaka on the property, but the Chum is saying just walking around and it will not.
So that time, someone else can go claim.
In principle, according up to that time, someone else can go claim it, right? Now, when it comes to if he bought the property, you then know, because what you really have is there's three ways in which a person can make a kinyan on real estate: kesef, shtar, and chazaka. So if he paid money for it, then anyway he made a kinyan on it, and you don't need chazaka. If he gave a shtar under certain circumstances, the Gemara discusses sometimes a shtar is not enough. So, a person doesn't just want a piece of paper. After all, he wants money for the place. So under certain circumstances, the shtar alone will work. In other circumstances, you need money together with it as well. In any case, then there can instead or another way is chazaka. The other person tells him, like chazako kni, I'm selling you this field. Go ahead and make a chazaka in it, and you'll be kind of it that way. And as far as the payment, will work that out afterwards. So then if he does a chazaka, then yeah. I mean, ordinarily it belongs either to one person or another, either up till the chazaka is done, up until one of these three things is done, and by it belongs to the seller, and after that belongs to the buyer. There isn't necessarily room for an interloper, for a third party to come in. But one place it's relevant we touched on it earlier in the Masechta, is if a ger passes away without any heirs, then his property is free for the taking for everyone. So then yeah, a person wants that property, he better hurry over there and make a chazaka as fast as possible. Otherwise, yes, somebody else can preempt him if somebody else makes the chazaka first. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, my time is Rabbi Eliezer. Why does Rabbi Eliezer hold that walking around in the property is enough? Dichtiv, we find by Avraham Avinu, Hashem tells him, Kumis halach ba'aretz la'orko l'rochba, go walk around in Eretz Yisrael, the length and the width, ki l'cha etnena, because I'm giving it to you. So you see, in other words, that Hashem is telling him, you walk around over there, and that way you'll acquire it for your future descendants, the Jewish people. What are the Rabbanan answer to that? They say, that's not really a kinyan. It's just because Avraham Avinu was dear and precious to Hashem, so therefore Hashem told him to do that, just as a symbolic thing, so that it will be easy for his descendants to conquer. And Rashbam says, in other words, this way the Satan won't have any ability to accuse them and say they don't deserve it. The Chida points out over here in Pesach Einayim, that the Ramban has an interesting shita on it. B'chla, we know when Hashem makes a promise for good through a Navi, generally speaking, it won't be canceled. That's why the test of a true Navi is whether he makes predictions for good and they can't come true. Nevertheless, though, sometimes you can have Shema Yigra Machet. Sometimes you can have, nevertheless, that a person's Averis can cause even a promise for good to be forfeited. We find Yaakov Avinu was concerned about that, for example. But now, the Ramban says, if the Nevuah is accompanied by symbolic action, then even if the person doesn't deserve it, it's necessarily going to come true. So now then, the Chiddush says, in a similar vein over here, the Chacham is saying, Hashem told Avraham, it's not just I'm verbally telling you that I'm giving your descendants Eretz Yisrael. The fact is, if they mess up then, they might forfeit their title to it. They might, the promise, they might forfeit Hashem's promise. But you're going to do now a symbolic action, walking around in Eretz Yisrael, and that, following the Ramban's Shita, makes it that it's irrevocable, no matter how badly the Jewish people mess up, nevertheless, Eretz Yisrael will still belong to them.
It's what's the shear? How much do you have?
Well, according to Rabbi Lazar, so that's the thing. According to Rabbi Lazar, that it actually makes a kinyan, it would have to be la'oko or la'rochba, the entire length and the entire width. But according to the Chachamim, it's not actually accomplishing that, but it's just only by Avram of Inur Hashem telling him to do it as a symbolic thing, but as far as halacha, that doesn't really work. Okay. Further on, the Mishnah talks about, again, dealing with matters of selling real estate and what's the minimum amount of space for something. So among other things, the Mishnah talks about if a person sells somebody a place for a maimer de moshav. So maimer de moshav, as we're going to learn in this piece of Gemara over here, was a minhag that they would do after a levaya. They would have several rounds of sitting down and saying hespedim or things like that for the mess, and then getting up and then repeat this a bunch of times. So the area where they did this was called the ceremony itself was called maimer de moshav, getting up and sitting down, and you needed an area for it. So the Mishnah talks about a person sells to somebody, says I'm selling you a place for a base maimer de moshav. What's the minimum amount that's considered if he gives him less than that, then the buyer can say this is a mecca. And if not, then if it's at least that size, then it's a valid sale. So the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, ain't person mishiva ma modus and moshavis lames. You never do less than 7 ma modus and moshavis for a mess. You can do more, but the minimum number to do is 7. Keneged havel havolim omar kehelas havel havolim akol havel. Second pasuk of Kehelas, he says, vanity of vanities, or emptiness of emptiness, or however you want to translate hevel exactly. Says Kehelas havel havolim akol havel. So now every time it says hevel counts as 1. Every time it says havolim in the plural counts as 2. So hevel havolim omar kehelas. So far that's 3. Hevel havolim makes 6. Akol havel is 7. So in token of that, then you have 7 ma'amodis and moshavis. What's the point? The idea is, in other words, that Rashbam explains, people should realize that a person's life is hevel, the mechayenu, hevel lefanecha, like we say in morning davening. So the idea is we should realize a person's life is hevel unless it's being used for the right purposes, and therefore, so doing all these ma'amodis and moshavis helps fix that idea more in people's heads, that a life has to have a purpose, otherwise all the various aspects of life are hevel. Rashbam brings another reason as well, that shtedim come together with the people who are returning from a beis hakvaras. So this way, with all these ma'amodis and moshavis, the shtedim will leave them. Rashbam wonders then in that case, then why do it at Davka after a Levaya? First of all, no, not so much why to do it after a Levaya, but in that case it should be a universal minhag. The Gemara is going to go on to say that it was not a universal minhag. So therefore, said Rashbam doesn't like the explanation, that it's because of Shadim. Nevertheless, the Ramah does bring that reason. There is an idea of a cloud. So you have what do we mean by Dafka 7 Havolim? Why does that represent a person's life? So one point is, you know, you may shnesen b'hem shivim shana. A person on average lives a typical person lives 70 years, and each decade is a different thing that a person is accomplishing in life. A person's first decade, he's growing into an older child. The second one, he's becoming a young adult. And you have, you know, in Pirkei Avos, ben shloshim l'koyach, ben arboim levina, etc. So each one of those decades can be hevel if it's not used properly, or it cannot, and therefore the seven ma'amodis represent that.
Show the area for Chazaka if they're getting up and sitting
down. No, this isn't chazaka. Hold on, this isn't chazaka. You're mixing up two things. We're off the topic of chazaka now. We're saying Reuven sells Shimon a plot of land. He said, Reuven says, Shimon, I'm going to sell you a plot of land that you can use for a maimon u'moshe. What is the minimum size that Shimon, that Reuven can sell him the minimum size plot where then Shimon has to, accept it and can't say it's a mekach tos? So that's what the Mishnah discusses, and so therefore it says the end. So this is just explaining what Maimon u'Moshav is. There was an interesting vote on it. In the Sefer Dvayom B'Yoyma, he has an interesting explanation. When we have on Yom Kippur night, we have the Piyut Kine Kachoyma B'Yada Yotzer. You have seven stanzas, and each one comparing us to a different kind of object used by a different kind of craftsman or whatever, and Kena Nachna B'Yodcha. So the author of Chaim Knoller there has an interesting explanation how each of those seven stanzas refers, among other things, to a different decade in a person's life. One represents the person in his first decade of life, and the second one in the second one, etc. And each one of them, there's a reason why we can compare a person's experiences during that decade of his life to a certain object, and we're saying Kena Nachna B'Yodcha, and we may have done averus during that decade, and we ask Hashem to clean up those averus and forgive us. With that said, the Vilna Gaon has a different explanation. He says the seven decades actually should count really from when a person is 20. Up till a person is 20, he says a person is accomplishing, is growing in new areas of Torah. Ben Chomeshon L'Mikra, Ben Esser L'Mishnah, Ben Chamesh Esser L'Gemara. After 20, more person tends to be more static. Yeah, he gains Koyach, he gains Bina, etc. But those are qualities that he gains, not so much more in Limud HaTorah and Kiyum HaMitzvah, not so much new dimensions of Limud HaTorah and Kiyum HaMitzvah. So the seven represent from then until 90, Ben Tishim L'Shruach, Ben Meir Kiyum HaMitzvah. So then those 70 years from 20 to 90 are what we're referring over here with the seven Havolim. He has an interesting explanation in that connection. The Pasuk says, Havel Havolim Omar Kehelas, Havel Havolim Akol Havel. Why is Omar Kehelas in the middle? He says, because Shlomo HaMelech lived to be only 52, which means that he experienced only three of these Havolim from 20 until 50, the decades from 20 to 30, 30 to 40, and 40 to 50. So therefore, he can only Omar Kehelas. He can say only from personal experience, I can tell you about those three. The other four, they exist by other people's lives, but I didn't personally experience them. So the Gemara says, Omar Leirav Acha Brei Derov Leirav Ashi Heichi Avdi. How exactly is a Maimon u'Moshav done? The Pashtus, in other words, where Rav Acha Brei Derov lived. They didn't have this minag, and nowadays we don't have it either. So therefore, he needed to know how it's done. Omar Leirav, so he says, Kedetanya, like we learn in a Braisa, Omar Rav Yehuda, Be Yehuda, in Yehuda, in the southern part of Eretz Yisrael, but he's shown a lot of person the Shiva Ma Modest almost Shavas Lames. Originally, what changed after that may have been any number of things, but the original minhag was they would do, as the Braisa had said before, no less than seven Ma Modest almost Shavas, keep going, and what they would do is, for example, on each one, Imdu Yekorim Amoidu Shvu Yekorim Shevu. After they sat for a while, they would tell them, stand up, you dear ones, you precious ones, stand up. Later on, they would stand up, they would walk a little bit, and then they would sit down, and then they would tell them, Shvu Yekorim Shevu, sit down, dear ones, sit down, and they would sit there and baklog the mess for a little bit, and mourn him, and think about the meaning of life or whatever, and they would repeat that over and over. Omru Lo, so the Chum told him, Im Kain, if that's so, after Shabbos Mutulasis Kain, then you should be allowed to do that. On Shabbos as well. Say, for example, that a Levaya took place late on Friday, and they're coming back on Shabbos. If all you're saying is they're saying Imdu Yekorim Imdu and Shvu Yekorim Shevu, then they could do that on Shabbos as well. And the fact is, we see that they don't do it on Shabbos. So therefore, in other words, therefore, the Chachamim are arguing it must be more than that. So therefore, one explanation is the Chachamim are saying it must be there's more to that. It must be there's not just sitting and standing and sitting and standing. It's also that during that time they're saying Hespedim for the mess and they're mourning him and then crying for him or whatever. And that of course you don't do on Shabbos. So therefore they're saying so don't tell us it's only Imdu Yekorim and Shvu Yekorim. There definitely is more than that. There's definitely Hespedim and other such things involved as well that are inappropriate on Shabbos. In any case, Rav Ashi is explaining though at least. Reb Yehuda is explicitly saying what they did, so therefore you can know from that what the basic concept of Maimon u'Moshav is. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Geula for Rosh Chodesh Nissan. We have the minhag of saying the nasi that was makrav that day. Anybody who didn't say the nasi, by the way, don't forget to. So the Rebbe talked about nasicha, that the saying the nasiim in Nissan actually has to do also with the whole concept of geula in Nissan. Nissan is after all the chodesh of geula, and the name Nissan itself means it is meloshim nes. I saw somebody pointed out, by the way, the same way, for example, as we have in there's a Gemara expression, for example, Rav Tzon, which means an animal that regularly crouches down. You put a burden on it and it regularly crouches down under it. Similarly, it says he had to solchon the Yisrael, that Hashem regularly over and over forgives the Jewish people. Well, then Nissan, it means, in other words, is this month, not just a month of Nes, but a month of Nissim over and over again. So the Rebbe continues, therefore, so now in Nissan we read about the Korbanos and the Nesiim for the dedication of the Mishkan, because Nissan is the most appropriate time, the most mesugal time for the Geula Mitzvah Shlema, and then we will have the dedication of the third Beis Mikdash, which the third Beis Mikdash is the culmination of the Mishkan and of the previous Batei Mikdash. Continuing with halachas of tzitzis, we were talking about that if you have a garment that's slit part way up, then if the slit is more than halfway up, then you have to put tzitzis on it. And what happens if you want to put a strap or a ribbon to close it up? And what happens if you want to put buttons or snaps or various things like that? So the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, when we wear a talus cotton, then you have to make sure that it's cut, that it's open most of the way up both sides. So the ma'isa, the ones that we wear that are just that are where we just put them front and back, or there's no problem with them. Of course, they're slit all the way up the side. Undershirt ones, though, yeah, they would have to make sure that they're open up, that they're open most of the way up. It has to be roiv on nirle naim, that should be visibly the most, so not just, in other words, like a drop more than 50%, it actually has to be noticeable that it's more than that. And then also don't put on hooks or buttons or whatever below the belt, even if those are in fact more than halfway up. Say, for example, the talus cotton is very long. Nevertheless, the Alter Rebbe says still maris ayin. And again, even if these hooks can easily be opened up, hooks or whatever it is, or zippers or whatever can be opened up, it would still be maris ayin. So in short, if you're going to wear undershirt tzitzis, I mean, lamaisa, the manufacturers make them nowadays that they are open more than halfway up, but don't go putting snaps or buttons or Velcro on them to close them up, because then they tackle won't be chayiv in tzitzis. As far as the corners, the Alter Rebbe points out, the corners have to be squared off. They can't be round, because a round corner is not called a kanaf. For which reason, we talked about before, that kapotas, for example, which often are slit more than halfway up, the manufacturers round one of the corners in order to avoid the issue of having to put tzitzis on them.